Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a senior scholar. She's in Berlin, helping me to understand how Europe is regarding what it woke up to this morning. The Electoral College ballots were coming in, and it was inevitable that Mr. Trump would be declared the new president-elect of the United States of America. The FT headline reflects some depth of thinking about what has happened. Trump elected U.S. president in historic comeback. Subhead, Republican defeats Kamala Harris and will return to pinnacle of global power with his, quote, America First agenda. Judy, a very good day to you. I do a momentary pause over the America First. That is referring to a committee that was put together in the late summer, early fall of 1940. It was put together with the permission of Herbert Hoover, the former president, and a man named Robert Wood, who was the head of Sears Roebuck, and other distinguished Americans, because it was their opinion that the European war underway since September of 39 was no business of the United States. It was their opinion that the U.S. had been lied to or misled by Woodrow Wilson, getting into the first war, where afterwards, with 50,000 dead Americans, the European empires went back to squabbling with each other about colonial enterprise and trade. It was their opinion that we're not going to send American boys to die in a European war. We have two oceans. They'll never get here. And their star testifier before Congress and traveling America to speak to the American people directly and on radio was the aviator hero Charles Lindbergh, who continued to say, it's not our affair. Europe always has wars. We left Europe a long time ago. That's why we're here. It's not our affair. Now, I mention that because it's in the historical memory of the United States. Sometimes they're called isolationists. It's also, I believe, in the historical memory of Europe. So now that they're waking up to a candidate who has used that language, how does Europe think of this victory? Is it ready for it? Is it ready for America First? It's not our affair. Good day to you, Judy.
Good day, John, and thanks for having me on your show, as ever, very timely. Europe is not ready. Europe always believes in wishful thinking. Europe always believes that it'll muddle through. But even before Trump was elected 8 years ago, previous administrations, the Obama administration and the Bush administrations, warned Europe to get their act together on security, on intelligence, on defence and on trade and on integration. And they supported this. And of course, the Europeans never did anything about it. Trump comes into office 8 years ago. Nothing is done about it. Biden comes into office. Oh, what a relief. Europeans still don't make the necessary moves over security and defence. They do help Ukraine, that is true, but thanks to the US prodding under Biden. And now we have Trump again, and the hand-wringing, oh heavens, now we have to really get our act together. But they're not going to get their act together because the European Union is divided. They don't know what kind of union they want, and they don't want any kind of integration that would actually make Europe sufficiently strong in defence, in security, and the economy, and in banking.
And so the morning after, Europe's opinion is that it's just talk in America, and they'll write the check and bail us out if we get in trouble again?
I think Europe is in very, very, very bad shape. And this is to the Trump administration's advantage, because the Europeans are increasingly reliant on the United States for their exports. Actually, and the decline of exports to China is actually now falling a little with the Europeans looking to the US. And given the Russia invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the Europeans now are increasingly relying on US energy, liquefied natural gas, and of course, it's the security. The Europeans are completely reliant on the American nuclear umbrella, not to mention the fact that an awful lot of European armaments actually need US supplies. So essentially, Donald Trump can call an awful lot of the shots when it comes to defining his policy with the Europeans. And the Europeans are not prepared to find alternatives, and they have been sleepwalking through these successive White House administrations.
Let's move through the themes. The first theme is energy. Germany's going through a bad patch right now because of innovation, competition, but also energy, since the Russian supply was cut off at the beginning of the war. Is Europe anticipating that it must make changes? U.S. has lots of liquefied natural gas. Is that going to sustain Germany's recovery? Will that sustain the European Union? Are they talking about not self-sufficiency, but imagining there will be a day where the Ukraine war ends, but Russia's not coming back? How are they thinking about the future and energy?
Well, very slowly, actually. They know the Germans particularly, and with France's nuclear power, Germany has no nuclear power anymore, but they haven't diversified. And actually, in 2023, the EU imported 63 billion cubic meters of American liquefied natural gas, and that's making the US Europe's second largest gas supplier after Norway. And just for your listeners, this compares to 18 billion cubic meters of LNG imports from the US in 2020. In other words, frankly, the US as an energy supplier is not going to go away. And it won't go away in the foreseeable future, because there has to be a huge investment push by the EU member states, the big ones particularly, to invest more and more in renewables. It's happening, but it's not enough, because there's a big squeeze on spending right across the EU countries now because of inflation and other issues.
So we move from energy, which must be reliable, I understand that, to industry. And I'm most familiar with the German case because for some reason the last week there have been article after article about the German car industry. I think it's the Volkswagen news that's driving it. But my understanding is that Germany is aware that it must make changes in its economic model. And no export only, and it must deindustrialize, and it must make changes for the way it earns money. Or am I just reading the newspapers and that's not happening?
Well, you're reading the newspapers as much as I am, and the Financial Times has been a leader on this in explaining the crisis in the car industry. And it's not because of China. It's very, very easy to blame China for all of Germany's economic woes. Germany's economic woes are down to political interference. They are down to political support for the status quo and a political unwillingness to change the economic model. And now with artificial intelligence, and now with the Chinese big push to actually capture much desired markets, the European car industry, particularly the German and French, have been caught napping, as if they didn't know. And now they're trying to race up and get the electrical auto industry up and running. But they need the whole infrastructure to do this. But also it's going to demand far less workers. And here's the crunch. Deindustrialization demands fewer employees.
Right. Right. You do not need as many staff to build an electric car as you do a gas-driven car.
That's right.
And the robots are coming everywhere. Now, I want to go from industrial policy to political ambitions. Olaf Scholz is the leader of a coalition that is reported here to be feuding every day. Is that a stable coalition, or How does your vote work? Does he have to call an election? Can he be challenged? When is the next election he must call?
Well, the next elections are scheduled for less than a year from now, but he has to go to the parliament, and there has to be either a crisis of confidence or he has to get consensus from the coalition partners that he wants to resign and call a snap election. It's not as easy as it seems. There's such bickering in this three-party coalition that consists of the Greens and the pro-business Liberal Democrats and the Social Democrats, because they know that if they call an election now, they will be absolutely decimated. So they're holding on, but the longer they hold on, the more bickering over the budget, over defence spending, over Ukraine, over the transatlantic relationship, over energy emissions, over trying to delay putting off phasing out the combustion car sector. It's every single day there's a disagreement, and it's very debilitating, and the more they stay in power, the less popular they become. But yet they seem to be hanging on, unless there's a fundamental change of mind over the next couple of weeks that Olaf Scholz will throw in the towel and call elections.
The Christian Democrats, led by Friedrich Merz, do they have a response to the troubles that Germany's in that's different from the coalition?
I think this is a very good question. I think the Christian Democrats do want to be more radical when it comes to tax reform, when it comes to labour reform, when it comes to structural reform, when it comes to the infrastructure, artificial intelligence, digitisation, modernising the railways, for instance. But my impression is that Merz doesn't want to frighten away the voters. He has to do things quite gradually. But there's no doubt, especially among the younger generation, that they actually want change. So Merz will probably change his language and make it more radical, certainly, over the next couple of months, seeing the disarray in the coalition and seeing that actually the public do want change, but it's got to be explained to them in a way that won't frighten them.
Now, Angela Merkel led the CDU for 16 years. Is there no memory of that? Angela Merkel's policies contributed to many of the cultural challenges that Germany now lives with. Is Merz separate from that?
One thing, Merz and Merkel were bitter rivals, and actually Merkel managed to see off Merz as a potential leader. So Merz was waiting in the wings. But a lot of Germany's problems actually go back to Merkel, Angela Merkel, that she didn't actually push through any kind of reforms. Okay, there was the COVID issue, there was the euro crisis, there was the Ukraine crisis and so on, but there was minimum, if no structural reforms to actually modernize Germany. So essentially, since around 2005, Germany has been sailing along in the belief that the economic model could continue without fundamental change.
We're going to turn to the war fighting going on in Europe next when we come back, because a major story is NATO, of course, and NATO needs the cooperation of all members of NATO, all 30 members, I believe, unless they added somebody recently. And Germany is a critical component there. What is to be done with the Trump administration, which comes into office in about 75 days?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.